Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, March 2nd. Apartment rent continues to rise in Midland. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. No place in Texas is showing year-over-year rent increases like Odessa and Midland, according to apartmentlist.com. The online apartment guide reported in its national rent report that the Petroplex cities rank number 1 and 2 in the state for rent increases percentage-wise. Compared to last February, the rent has increased 20% in Odessa. In Midland, the percentage is 19%. That means Odessa and Midland are again bucking a trend across the state and across the nation. ApartmentList.com reported this week that across the nation, year-over-year rent growth is continuing to decelerate and now stands at 3%, its lowest level since April 2021. Midland is also noteworthy because the increase in the oil field activity is having a greater impact in the short term. Rents in Midland rose 1.8% monthly. That was the fourth highest month-over-month increase in Texas, trailing only Galveston, 2.3%, Lubbock, 2.0%, and Killeen, 1.9%. ApartmentList.com showed the median one-bedroom rent in Midland rose to $831, the third highest of West Texas cities, while the median two-bedroom rent climbed to $1,041, the second highest. In Odessa, those respective median rents were $678 and $892. Lubbock is home to the most expensive rents, $857 and $1,053 respectively. Midland's median two-bedroom rents are still dramatically behind those in larger metropolitan areas in the state. Apartment List reported two-bedroom rents of $1,123 in El Paso, $1,273 in Houston, $1,297 in San Antonio, $1,310 in Fort Worth, $1,427 in Dallas, and $1,780 in Austin. ApartmentList.com also reported a median rent of $1,597 in The Woodlands. The highest two-bedroom rents in the state can be found in Flower Mound, $2,181, Frisco, $2,102, and Allen, $2,001. ApartmentList.com also reported that rents increased in February in 62 of the nation's 100 largest cities. Energy industry will be key to addressing water concerns. The story was written by Mella McEwen. Richard Brantley, Senior Vice President, Operations with University Lands, and this year's Chairman of the Permian Basin Water and Energy Conference Advisory Board, looked out into the horseshoe and didn't see hundreds of attendees. Instead, he saw a team working across industry and company lines to address the growing challenges of produced water. Quote, "Let's see ourselves collectively as a team," he said, as he introduced Enrique Garcia, production manager with XTO Energy, title sponsor of the conference, "Let's Go Team." Garcia said his goal was to set the stage for the two-day conference, describing how the Permian Basin is the most strategic producing basin in the country, perhaps the world. It is also strategic to his company, which plans to ramp up its Permian Basin output to 1 million barrels a day by 2027. At the same time his company is ramping up output from its Permian Basin holdings, Garcia said the company is committed to protecting its environment from setting a goal of net zero Scope 1 methane emissions to protecting what he called the most precious resource, water. The four pillars of XTO's water plan are, first, prioritizing sourcing its water from its own oil and gas production. Last year, he said, the company sourced 150 million barrels from its own operations, offsetting 65% of its water use. The remainder came almost exclusively from brackish water formations. Secondly, minimizing downhole disposal of water by cooperating in strategic water research into technology to reuse water, and increasing its own recycling efforts and sharing of water and other efforts to reuse produced water. Third, the company is prioritizing beneficial reuse by investing in a portfolio of research into reuse technology and supporting both the Texas and New Mexico Produced Water Consortia. Fourth, work on water issues beyond itself by supporting entities like the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation and local and regional foundations that work to protect water resources and habitats. The reason for this commitment is because, quote, we have 1,000 employees and 10,000 contractors here and their families, he explained. Brooke Popp, chairwoman of the Texas Water Development Board, went further, saying the Texas miracle can't exist without Texas water. Quote, water is a life or death issue for this state, she told the conference attendees. That's why state officials are taking aggressive steps to plan for future water supplies. Quote, why do we plan? Because we add 1,200 Texans a day, she said. Her agency is taking what she called a bottom-up regional approach to the issue, establishing 16 regional water boards that address the water needs specific to their regions. In the Permian Basin, known as Region F, the population is forecast to surge from more than 700,000 in 2020 to over 1 million by 2070. Irrigation dominates demand for water, followed by municipal use and then mining, though that sector is projected to fall by two-thirds by 2070. Legislators have established the State Water Implementation Fund for Texas, also known as SWIFT, which has committed over $11 billion in projects since 2015 and saved $1.3 billion on the open market, according to Pop. Projects have created 1.6 million acre-feet of new water supply. There is also funding for rural water assistance, $150 million, along with $15 million in agricultural water conservation and $3 million in technical assistance. Pop praised the Texas Produced Water Consortium, saying its efforts to increase use of brackish water both inside and outside the oil and gas industry can be of tremendous importance. Quote, the cost of doing nothing is far more than taking action, she said. In 20 years, we'll wish we had taken action, end quote. Business Buzz. The destination opens for 2023 season. The story was written by Morgan Taylor Thomas. For the last 3 years and 9 months, the destination gave Midland a schedule packed with class acts, small-town heroes, and big hitters. Now they're ready to ring in year four. Martin, Gloria, and Thelma Salazar opened the eclectic outdoor stage area in May 2019, making the hotspot a Midland household name. To learn more about the work the Salazar family put into the destination, make sure to read about the trio's undying passion to make Midland the music hub of West Texas in a previous Reporter Telegram article. The destination currently holds a full calendar from March to November. To fill your calendars with date nights, open mics, and more, see the entire event roster at www.thedestinationmidland.com/calendar of events. Hours run 6 p.m. to 11 p.m. Thursdays and 7 p.m. to midnight Fridays and Saturdays. Make sure to follow the crew on Facebook to stay up to date with event changes and more. www.facebook.com/destinationmidland 1705 West Industrial Avenue. Ahead of Thursday's opening night, Martin and Gloria gave the Reporter Telegram the 411 on what to expect from the beloved music venue in 2023. Question: what are you excited for most this year? Martin: this year, we've introduced Friday Night Live, which consists of local bands and is snow covered to the public. It's really good for the music scene and exposure here in Midland. Some of the big events we have coming up, of course, are Crawfish Boil, Cinco de Mayo, the Blues Fest, and Rocktoberfest. Gloria: it's going to be our first year that we're operating fully, so what I'm most excited about is the acts we are able to bring in. They're very good quality, and we give our local bands the opportunity to play as well. The music and entertainment we're putting on this year is just really going to be over the top. Question: what kind of impact do you hope the 2023 season leaves on the community? Martin: for us, live music is probably the most important thing, and to have that here in Midland. In conjunction with that, the local community, the food trucks, we really want to push Thursdays as community events, and that means everybody. We really would like to have more community presence on those Thursdays because that's what they're geared for. Gloria: we have community events that allow families to come in together. There's not very many places in Midland where families can have fun, especially in the evening. We're hoping to make an impact as well for nonprofit organizations, and we're teaming up with several of them to put on events where they get awareness and fundraisers, just be a contribution to our community. Question: why is the destination the place to be? Martin: it's a unique patio, and we put a lot of heart and soul into building each section. It's not just a place to go hear music, but an experience. Gloria: people come in as strangers, and they leave as friends. Not only our friends, but of all customers. We just have a very healthy, clean environment where people can come together and have fun. If somebody is looking to have a good time, they should just come up to the destination, because once they do, they'll want to keep coming back.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing with more articles from the inside pages of the Midland Reporter Telegram, published Thursday, March 2nd. Midland College Board approves new entrance to campus, by Ben Schaefer. There will be a new north entrance to Midland College. The Midland College Board of Trustees approved a resolution to construct a new $2.5 million road entry to the college Tuesday. The road will come off North Garfield Street and wind behind the Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center's Physician Assistant Facility at the north end of the campus, according to Midland College President Steve Thomas. The road will connect to an intersection next to the softball complex. Currently, there are two entrances and exits off Garfield. It gives us an opening, if you will, to expanding the north end of the campus with an additional roadway that would lead to the CTE facility that we've been talking about, Thomas said. The scope of the work will include lighting and signage. Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center is planning and paying for the new roadway, according to Thomas. Region 18 Education Service Center hosts School Safety Summit, from staff reports. Region 18 Education Service Center hosted the 2023 School Safety Summit, a free event that brought community leaders in education, mental health, law enforcement, first responders, city and county from across the region to discuss the challenges of keeping our communities safe in today's world. Events like this, where leaders from the region can hear and learn from others' experience, are valuable. We don't get the opportunity to be in the same room and have proactive discussions as much as we'd like, and it's important, said Ector County Judge Dustin Fawcett. One featured speaker, retired Dallas ISD Police Chief Craig Miller, presented When the Bell Rings, which deals with law enforcement, first responders' relationship with school administration, and what should be done before, during, and after an incident takes place. Attendees also heard from Lee Wall, who served as superintendent at Santa Fe ISD during the school shooting at Santa Fe High School in 2018. Lieutenant Paul Smith, FBI Executive Fellow, who has researched and provided training for active shooter events, Kathy Martinez Prather, director at the Texas School Safety Center, and more. Crime Stoppers offers cash reward in 1995 cold case, by Mercedes Cordero. Midland Crime Stoppers is offering a $2,500 cash reward for any information that helps solve a 25-year-old Midland cold case. Carolyn Colas was found deceased on May 27, 1995, partially nude in an alley near the 3000 block of West Ohio Street. Colas was on her routine morning walk in the neighborhood when she was attacked, according to a Department of Public Safety cold case bulletin. Colas was looking forward to her upcoming graduation from nursing school. At the time of her death, she was the proud mother of two, a two-year-old and a nine-year-old, according to a bulletin. Investigators at the time followed the line of evidence they had, but the case eventually went cold. Investigators have recently reignited the search for the person or persons responsible of Colas's death through updated technology and investigative methods. Call Midland Crime Stoppers at 694-TIPS or download the Crime Stoppers app, P3 Tips, and submit an anonymous mobile tip. No caller ID is ever used, and those providing information will remain anonymous. Texas Crime Stoppers is also offering a cash reward of up to $3,000 to any person who provides information that leads to an arrest. To be eligible for the cash rewards, tipsters must call the Crime Stoppers hotline at 1-800-252-TIPS 8477. Tipsters will be provided a tip number instead of using a name. Information on this case may also be submitted through the Texas Rangers Cold Case website or by calling 800-346-3243. Hikers may encounter temporary closures at Big Bend, by Mercedes Cordero. Big Bend National Park visitors may encounter temporary closures starting Friday along the Rio Grande from Gravel Pit to Daniels Ranch, the National Park Service reported. From Friday through Sunday, a team will be cutting down and applying herbicide to invasive salt cedars, tamarix SPP, along the Rio Grande from Gravel Pit to Daniels Ranch, including Hot Springs Canyon. Salt cedar, also known as tamarisk, is an aggressive non-native group of closely related trees. These plants crowd out native species, trap sediment, and consume large amounts of water, the press release stated. Small trees and shoots will be treated with the herbicide triplapyr, while larger trees will be cut down with chainsaws, followed by an application of herbicide to the stumps. With the removal of these invasive trees, the Rio Grande can better transport sediment downstream, opening up gravel bars and wider floodplains. This in turn benefits native plants such as willows and wildlife such as freshwater mussels, fish, and beavers. Removing dense stands of salt cedar also opens up the banks of the river for recreational use, the press release stated. This temporary closure and signage will be in place while herbicide is being applied. Texas and New Mexico see supply opportunities in produced water, by Mella McEwen. Water is a concern for Lori Blong, not just as owner with her husband Jared of Octane Energy, but as mayor of Midland. As mayor, we're working on a regional water solution with Abilene and San Angelo, she said as she opened the luncheon at the Permian Basin Water and Energy Conference. She is also talking with industry representatives from Pioneer Natural Resources to Chevron and XTO as they realize the opportunities that lie with beneficial reuse of produced water. The Permian Basin should solve the issue of produced water and show the nation and the world how we can solve this issue, she said. New Mexico was the first state to take steps to address produced water management, noted Ben Shepherd, president of the Permian Basin Petroleum Association. He asked Mike Hightower, director of the New Mexico Produced Water Research Consortium, how the consortium came to be. Hightower said the consortium was put together in about 10 days as various groups met and decided the consortium would be a good way to support oil and gas, which supplies about 42% of the state's budget, while ensuring state fresh water supplies were protected. I thought it was one of the better bills I'd seen in 20 years, Hightower said. But he noted the bill required the industry to fund the consortium, which it has. If the industry didn't want to help, if they didn't think there was a problem, if they didn't want to help solve the problem, we wouldn't have a consortium, he said. Rusty Smith, executive director of the Texas Produced Water Consortium based at Texas Tech, said Hightower has been a great beacon to look at and how to create our consortium. The consortium has already fulfilled the mandate given when it was created in 2021 by submitting a report to the legislature on the potential of produced water. Consortium analysts found that after accounting for what the oil and gas industry will use in its operations, 500,000 acre-feet of produced water, or about 11 million barrels a day, that holds the potential to be a new water source for Texas. Now the consortium is setting up pilot projects, one in the Midland Basin and one in the Delaware Basin, with the potential to double that total depending on results, to study how the produced water can be cleaned at scale and economically. Smith said the projects will go online in September or October of this year. We want to treat water specific to those regions, Smith explained. State Senator Charles Perry is keenly focused on securing new water sources, Smith told the audience, noting that analysis shows that in 50 years, the state will see a shortage of 7 million acre-feet of water. Hightower told Shepherd, increased data is key to advancing operations. The New Mexico legislature is considering funding into research in brackish water characterization and to develop pilot projects that will provide operational data. The more data the consortium can provide agencies, the easier it will be for the industry to continue operating, he said. He added that he wants to share that data with Smith's group and Texas agencies like the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality. The more data that we can get and share, the more we can move forward with beneficial reuse, he said. There will be opportunities this year for us to work together.
Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, March 2nd. Clayton Eugene Waddell of Frisco, Texas, passed away on February 24th. Clayton was born on April 22nd, 1990, in Midland, to Clinton Eugene and Carrie Renee Waddell, and married the love of his life, Samantha Smith, on September 3rd, 2018, in Kyle, Texas. Clayton graduated from Midland High School in 2008 and attended Texas State University. Clayton is survived by his wife, Samantha Waddell, and children, Kason Waddell, McKenna Waddell, and Collins Waddell of Frisco, parents Clinton and Carrie Waddell of Horseshoe Bay, Texas, sisters Kristen Coulter and her husband Turney of Granbury, Texas, Kendra Lang and her husband Taylor of Spring Branch, Texas, three nieces and four nephews, father and mother-in-law Steve and Belinda Smith of Rowlett, Texas, and several aunts and uncles. He is preceded in death by his grandparents. Visitation will be held on Thursday, March 2nd, at the Berkshire Chapel, 9073 Berkshire Drive in Frisco, Texas, from 5:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. Services will be held at the Berkshire Chapel on Friday, March 3rd at 2 p.m., interment to follow at Ridgeview West Memorial Park in Frisco. In lieu of flowers, the family requests that donations be made in Clayton's memory to Lake Point Academy in Granbury. Cynthia Ann Frischnauer, also known to friends as Cindy, age 74 of Midland, passed away on Monday, February 27th, at home. A celebration of life will be held at 2 p.m. Friday, March 17th, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Cindy was born on October 10th, 1948, in Liberal, Kansas, to Peggy and Robert Bob Madden. Cindy graduated from Liberal High School in 1968. She later earned her bachelor's degree from the University of Texas Permian Basin. Cindy worked for AT&T and its many subsidiaries for 43 years before retirement. On May 2, 1987, she was married to Dwayne Frischauer and recently celebrated their 35th wedding anniversary. Cindy was actively involved in the community and Stonegate Fellowship Church. Cindy is survived by her husband, Dwayne Frischauer of Midland, two sisters, Renita Johnson of Amarillo and Ruth McBride of Canton, Oklahoma, one brother, Rick Madden of Liberal, Kansas, two stepdaughters, Debbie Morgan of Austin, Texas, and Diane Lead of Denver, Colorado. She is also survived by four nieces, one nephew, and five grandchildren. Cindy is preceded in death by her parents, Billy Louise Madden, a sister, Marjorie Lynn Eastup, Albert Louis Sonny Madden, a brother, and Jackie Lynn Johnson, a niece. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to the charity of their choice. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Daisy Wynell Rickey, age 87, of Midland, passed away on Sunday, February 26. Wynell was born in Stevens County, Oklahoma, on March 24, 1935. Wynell graduated from high school in Velma, Oklahoma. She met and married William Rickey in 1953. They had three children and were married 61 years. The family moved to Midland in 1970, and she called Midland home from that point on. She worked in retail until she retired in 1990, then continued to work at the VFW for several years. She is survived by her sons, Steve Rickey and wife Deborah, Glenn Rickey, both of Midland, as well as several grandchildren and great-grandchildren. She is survived by her brother, Wendell Stevens, and his wife, Sue, of Oklahoma, and several nieces and nephews. She was preceded in death by her parents, William Oren and Elva Lee Stevens, her husband, William E. Rickey, her brother, Wayne Stevens, and her daughter, Karen W. Rickey. The family will receive friends from 4:30 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. Thursday, March 2nd, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Funeral services will be held at 12 p.m. Friday, March 3rd, at Nally Pickle and Welch Chapel in Midland. Jimmy Williams, who is a grandson-in-law, will be officiating. The interment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park, with a reception at the American Legion Post 19, 501 Veterans Air Park Lane. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Sharon Elizabeth Woods was born on June 20, 1940, to Ida Elizabeth and Franklin Earl Sitterly in Amarillo, Texas. She passed away on February 27. She was the oldest daughter of this union. She grew up with an older brother, Lewis, and two sisters, Helen and Lois, in Lubbock, Texas. Graduating from Lubbock High School in 1958, she enjoyed studying home economics and attended Texas Tech University. While attending the university, she met her husband of nearly 64 years, Rayford Woods of Kermit, Texas. The two married in Lubbock on March 8, 1959. They settled in Midland in 1965. They had three children from that union, Becky Lynn, Jeffrey Scott, and Stephen Rayford. Sharon Elizabeth Woods is survived by her husband, Rayford Woods of Midland, daughter Becky Nall, her husband, Carol, of Midland, son Jeff Woods, his wife Carrie, of May, Texas, son Stephen Woods, of Mineral Wells, as well as several grandchildren and great-grandchildren. She is survived by a brother, Lewis Sitterly, his wife Carrie, of Austin, Texas, and a sister, Helen McQuiston, of Evanston, Wyoming. Sharon is preceded in death by her mother and father, Ida and Franklin Sitterly, and sister Lois Newton. A visitation for Sharon will be held Friday, March 3rd, from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Ellis Rest Haven Funeral Home, 4616 North Big Spring Street in Midland. A funeral service will occur Saturday, March 4th, at 1 p.m. at First Methodist Church, 300 North Main Street in Midland. A burial will occur Saturday, March 4th at 3 p.m. at 4616 North Big Spring Street in Midland. Kenneth William Averill, also known as Mr. Bill Averill, was born February 28, 1952, in Canton, Illinois. Mr. Bill passed away in his home on February 11th. Services will be held at American Heritage Funeral Home on March 6th at 10 a.m.
This is Christy, and I'm continuing to read the Odessa American for Thursday, March the 2nd, 2023. Council letting T2 Drive City Manager search. Mental Scientist boasts of large success rate, by Kim Smith. The entire Odessa Council met with representatives of T2 Professional Consulting for the first time Tuesday night and agreed to put together a 6-member panel that will determine exactly what the city is looking for in its next city manager. Mayor Javier Hoven hired T2 for $338,000 December the 14th, the day after the council voted 5-2 to fire city manager Michael Marrero and city attorney Natasha Brooks without explanation. T2 managing member Mike Wilson introduced the council to Hank Seitz, who he said will help the panel conduct a comprehensive assessment of the city manager candidates. Seitz is one of the 100 people in the world that can do this type of diagnostic assessment and who has a lot of initials behind his name, Wilson said. Most people call me Dr. Hank, and like they said, a lot of initials, but basically, I'm a mental scientist. I'm a behavioral psychologist. I am a certified analyst in a lot of different areas of the human being, Seitz said. We have a time-proven process that we have used worldwide with organizations on a federal, state, city, and local basis as well. We literally select candidates that are the most qualified candidates in a way that no one else can. Instead of relying entirely upon resumes and interviews, which are unreliable, Seitz said he helps organizations spot people who have the necessary talents to perform the job and are motivated to do so. By doing so, employers can expect to see a 30% increase in productivity and a 50% increase in job retention, he said. Seitz asked the council to put together a panel of subject matter experts he will work with via Zoom for 60 to 90 minutes to help them determine the key talents, motivators, and behaviors for the city manager position. They'll go through an assessment process, and those assessments will be electronically averaged to come up with a job match, Seitz said. Then, before meeting any candidates, they'll then run a tri-metrics on the candidates that qualify best based on their resumes. I can look at the 25-page report, and on the first page, I can tell you who's the most qualified candidate for that position without ever meeting them, interviewing them. I don't even need to see their resume, Seitz said. Normally, it takes about 6 months to get to know an employee, but this process speeds up that process, he said. You'll be able to understand this individual right away, how to communicate with this person, how not to communicate with this person, how to manage this person, and how to motivate him. You will literally have three easy-to-read pages to where you'll understand who you're dealing with right away, Seitz said. The panel should be comprised of two city council members, two department heads, and two citizens, Seitz said. Hovind said he wanted Swanner on the panel to get the female perspective, and the council agreed Odessa Police Chief Mike Girk will be on it as well. They intend to discuss the rest of the panel members during a special meeting next week. Wilson said he expects the new city manager will be named in mid-July, early August. Dr. Hank Seitz, who lives in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, describes himself in various ways on LinkedIn, Amazon, and his own website. On his LinkedIn page, he says he's a success and happiness coach, channeling answers and solutions for you, who spent 14 years as the general manager of Procter & Gamble, leaving in 1995. While he told the council he's a behavioral psychologist, his LinkedIn account states he has a Doctor of Philosophy degree and a bachelor's degree in business administration from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. On his own website, he said he has a bachelor's degree in business, master's degree in psychology, and a PhD in mental science from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. His Amazon bio says he has a degree in business from the University of Wisconsin-Madison, is a behavioral and talent certified analyst, and has a PhD in mental science. John Lucas, Assistant Vice Chancellor of Communications at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, could not immediately determine if Seitz was a UW-Madison graduate. However, he did say UW-Madison does not offer a degree in mental science. The Texas Behavioral Health Executive Council has no record of a license being issued to a Hank or Henry Seitz. The council provides license to psychologists, marriage and family therapists, professional counselors, and social workers. The Texas Department of Licensing and Regulation, which provides licenses to behavior analysts, also does not show a license for a Hank or Henry Seitz. Seitz has written at least 14 books with titles such as Your Royal Path to Riches, Think, Feel, and Grow Rich, The Happiest Man in the World, Easy Money, Easy Life, Health, Wealth, and Success, Walk with God, Conscious Mind Treatment, 13 Easy Steps to More Money, and Your GPS to Success. Another T2 representative, Micah Lunt, spoke briefly at the meeting. According to Inforney.com, an online news outlet, Lunt was fired from his job as the Forney police chief in March 2021 after serving 18 months. Prior to that, he was a law enforcement officer in College Station and Plano. Inforney.com reported Lunt was fired just a month after he filed a grievance against city manager Tony Carson, alleging a pattern of improper and hostile working conditions. The Forney Police Officers Association, Forney Professional Firefighters Association, and the Firefighters Association from the Illinois town where Carson used to work corroborated Lunt's allegations. According to Lunt's LinkedIn account, he founded Lunt Consulting in January 2011. His company provides executive search and assessments, / promotional processes, project management, expert testimony, impairment / intoxication, police procedure, corruption, misconduct, and maleficence, investigations, supervision, management and leadership training, strategic planning, recruiting and retention, emergency management and planning. Interim city manager Agapito Bernal said after the meeting that once a new city manager is hired, the city and T2 will turn their sights to naming a new city attorney and analyzing all of the other city positions. In the past, Hoven has said the city needs to determine what positions are needed and if the appropriate people are filling them. Water. In other matters, the city council heard a presentation from Aqua Texas, which along with its parent company, Essential Utilities, purchases water treatment and sewer plants from municipalities. After the presentation, the council stressed no decisions have been made, but they would like Aqua Texas to bring in a third-party consultant to determine the worth of the city's wastewater system. Eventually, if the city becomes interested in selling the wastewater plant, Aqua Texas would negotiate an agreement that would include an estimate of how much it would cost to improve it and determine a potential purchase price. Aqua Texas would also determine a potential 10-year rate plan. Speaking on behalf of Aqua Texas, an Essential Troy Hill and John Andrews said, Texas laws require public utility companies to offer fair market value for municipalities' assets and is prohibited from setting water rates. Those rates must continue to be set by the cities themselves, the men said. Every deal must be approved by the Public Utility Commission, and cities are always given a buyback option. The going rate right now is $5,000 to $6,000 per water connection, Hill said. By selling their water or sewer plants, cities no longer need to worry about operating costs, capital needs, or compliance issues, the men said. Such purchases give cities the ability to meet future development needs and pay off debts while also getting massive upgrades, they said. Hill also cited Flint, Michigan, Jackson, Mississippi, and Houston as proof government entities don't necessarily know best when it comes to water. Essential Utilities provides water to 3 million people in 10 states, including some living in 53 counties in Texas. They own 199 wastewater plants and more than 20 water plants. Hoven informed the rest of the council. Hill reached out to him following the water line break at 42nd and San Jacinto Streets back in June. He didn't bring it up then because of the massive outcry that happened when rumors began to fly about the county possibly selling the Ector County Coliseum. The mayor said rates are going to go up regardless of whether the city or public utility company owns the wastewater plant simply because of the improvements that are needed. He wants to explore the city's options because he is worried about the difficulties in finding and keeping staff, he said. Hoven stressed he's only interested in seeing what the city's options are. He's also said he's only interested in getting figures about the water waste plant, not the water treatment plant. Back in 2021, the council voted 4-3 to issue certificates of obligation to pay for a $95 million rehab project at that plant. Is the city council willing to kick the tires? There's no commitment. I don't want anyone walking out of this chamber thinking we're selling the water system. We're selling the wastewater system, Hoven said. Councilmember Chris Haney said, "We have lots and lots of water here, but no one is touching it because they are afraid of contaminants." He wants to know if Aqua Texas can work with oil field companies to use produced water, the water that comes out of the ground along with oil and gas. Andrew said smarter people than he would have to answer that question. Councilmember Steve Thompson said he thought the council owed it to residents to explore the option. The council can expect to hear back from Aqua Texas within 60 days, Hill said. Mike Wilson of T2 Professional Services helps explain the process to find the city of Odessa's next manager by Kim Smith, Odessa American.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing to read the Odessa American for Thursday, March 2nd, 2023. Wild Winds Are Back Today, by Michael Bauer. Those who haven't finished washing off the dust from their cars after Sunday's dusting might want to hold off a little longer. Today, the area is expected to see nearly a repeat of this past weekend's windy conditions, which saw most of the Permian Basin, including New Mexico, slammed with dust storms. The widespread wind event is expected today, with the system blowing in from Southern California and moving eastward. Wind speeds of up to 65 miles per hour are expected. Wednesday saw the return of high wind speeds after 2 days of relative calm in Odessa. The real big day will be Thursday, forecaster at the National Weather Service in Midland, David Munyon, said. Unfortunately, it could very well be a repeat of Sunday. There will be widespread high winds, potentially damaging winds, upwards of 60 to 65 miles per hour. We'll even see stronger gusts likely across the mountains. Today's high will be 66 degrees with a low of 44. Sunday saw blowing dust all over the high plains and Permian Basin, including Odessa. On Sunday, areas such as New Mexico and El Paso saw even heavier winds, while Lubbock had wind gusts up to 100 miles an hour, knocking down power lines. Munyon says the highest winds could blow in the southern parts of the Permian Basin, including the mountain regions, including the Davis and Guadalupe Mountains. I know the Guadalupe Mountains on Sunday had a peak wind gust of 103 miles per hour, Munyon said. We could see something very similar on Thursday. Whereas Sunday's winds picked up in the afternoon, Munyon says to expect wind speeds to ramp up a bit earlier today. We'll see winds pick up in the late morning and then peak around 3 p.m., and then it'll gradually die down into the evening, Munyon said. With the risk of widespread winds that are expected, there's the risk of blowing dust. Each event is different as far as the wind and where the dust is sourced from, Munyon said. On Sunday, we saw a lot of the dust sourced from the Chihuahuan Desert across northern Mexico and parts of south-central New Mexico, and then that carried all the way into the far west Texas and Permian Basin. It'll depend on how big that system is and how it sets up Thursday, but we could see pretty similar conditions to what we saw on Sunday. Visibility could be reduced to a quarter mile in some places from the blowing dust. Many areas across southeast New Mexico and La Mesa could see blinding visibility, Munyon said. Fortunately, those same areas may not get hit. The track of this storm is further south than the one on Sunday. The stronger winds should be in the south, below 20 and 10 towards Big Bend. With relative humidity expected to be as low as 10% and west winds blowing over 50 miles an hour, there's always the risk of fire danger, as Munyon is urging people to be cautious and not do anything that'll cause a spark. Of course, having such dry air like we do right now, the wind alone pose a big threat to fires, Munyon said. We have a critical fire danger tomorrow, but maybe a little less than a risk than what we had on Sunday. But when you have such high winds, that's what can help start a fire. We try to encourage the public to stop doing any outdoor activities and nothing that'll cause a spark. Don't throw cigarettes out the window. We can even see down power lines that can start a fire. For more up-to-date weather information, go to weather.gov/MAF. OC to host, commit to mental health. Odessa College invites the public and all OC students to commit to mental health, a come-and-go event from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. March 7th at the Salisbury Campus Center. The public service wellness event will include guest speakers, community groups, campus resources, and more. Guest speakers will address the following topics. 5 p.m., stress relief and coping mechanisms, the Odessa College Psychology Department. 6 p.m., Talk Saves Lives, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. 7 p.m., Mental Health Effects of Domestic Violence, the Crisis Center of West Texas. The goal of the event is to make the commitment to improve your mental health and to provide information and resources that can help if a person may be depressed or struggling. Getting help before things become an issue can also help the person and those close to that person. Everyone needs someone to talk to in a judgment-free space from time to time. The event is free to the public and OC students. Odessan Gets 12 More Years by Kim Smith. A 38-year-old Odessa man who is serving 41 months in federal prison in connection with the bomb hoax was sentenced to another 12 years in prison this week after pleading guilty to several other cases in state court. According to court documents, on April 7th, David Paul Finnegan, 38, left a suspicious device at the front steps of the Ector County Courthouse. The device consisted of a large PVC pipe containing miscellaneous objects. It was held together with black tape and had a wristwatch taped to it. The Odessa Police Department Explosives Ordnance Disposal Team was called out to examine the device. After the EOD technicians rendered it safe, they determined the device did not contain explosives. Further investigation revealed Finnegan was scheduled to have hearings on various matters at the courthouse the day he planted the device. As a result of its discovery, the courthouse was evacuated and shut down to the public for much of the day, causing various court proceedings to be postponed, including Finnegan's. Finnegan pleaded guilty to one count of perpetrating a hoax in U.S. District Court and was sentenced to 3 years and 5 months in federal prison and 3 years of supervised release in September. According to Ector County courthouse records, Finnegan signed several plea agreements with the Ector County District Attorney's Office Wednesday to clear up 9 pending cases going back to 2020. Finnegan pleaded guilty to possession of a controlled substance, possession of stolen property, 2 counts of injury to a child, tampering with a government record, and unauthorized use of a vehicle. In exchange, 2 counts of theft of property and 1 count of unauthorized use of a motor vehicle were dismissed. Under the terms of the plea agreement, Judge Den Whalen sentenced Finnegan to 10 years in prison on 1 of the injury to a child counts and ran 2 other 10-year sentences concurrently with it. He also sentenced Finnegan to 2 years in prison in 1 of the stolen car cases and ran it consecutive to the 10-year sentence, but concurrently with 2 other 2-year sentences. Ector County District Attorney Dusty Gallivan said the first part of Finnegan's 12-year sentence will run concurrently with his federal prison sentence. Odessan accused in theft. An Odessa man with a history of theft convictions was arrested Friday on a new theft charge after leading officers on a short chase. According to Texas Department of Public Service Public Safety records, James Remington Horn, 33, has a criminal history going back to 2004 and has done several prison stints in Huntsville for theft, stealing vehicles, evading arrest, and burglary. He was most recently sent to prison for 4 more other years in 2017 for stealing a trailer valued at more than $30,000. On Friday, Odessa Police Department detectives received a tip. A stolen trailer was parked in the 13,000 block of West Wintergreen. According to an OPD report, detectives and Ector County Sheriff's Office deputies confirmed it was parked next to a Chevrolet Silverado registered to Horn that had been seen on video hauling the trailer off. Horn, who was laying down in the pickup, refused to get out and drove through a field with the truck, the report stated. When Horn got to a dead end, he took off on foot, but was arrested with the help of a canine officer. Horn was booked into the Ector County Jail on suspicion of evading arrest with a motor vehicle, evading with two or more previous convictions, and theft with two more prior convictions. He remains in the Ector County Jail on surety bonds totaling $35,000. Odessa American Obituaries, Thursday, March 2nd. Charles Will, Odessa. Charles William Carroll, 69, left us Friday, February 24th in Odessa, Texas. He was born to Edward Carroll and Maureen Rianne Christie Carroll of San Angelo, Texas, December 6, 1953. He is survived by his loving wife, Anita H. Carroll, and his daughter, Michelle Carroll. Sons, Charlie, Michael, Dylan, and Timothy Carroll. Seven grandchildren and one granddaughter. He will be missed dearly. Services will be held Thursday, March 2nd at La Paz Funeral Home from 12 to 9 p.m., and he will be laid to rest at Sunset Memorial Gardens Friday, March 3rd at 1 p.m. Death notices from Thursday, March 2nd. Brandon Lee Altman, Odessa. Brandon Lee Altman, 45, of Odessa, died Thursday, February 23rd in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. Thursday, March 2nd, Acres West Funeral Chapel. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Clarence Musselman L. Brown, Odessa. Clarence Musselman L. Brown, 87, of Odessa, died Saturday, February 25th in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Hector Contreras Montoya, Odessa. Hector Contreras Montoya, 57, of Odessa, died Monday, February 27th in Odessa. Chapel service will be held at 5 p.m. Friday, March 3rd, Acres West Funeral Chapel. Reverend Richard Lopez is officiating. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Russell Wallace Richardson, Midland. Russell Wallace Richardson, 86, of Odessa, died Sunday, February 26th in Midland. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m., March 4th, 2023, Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Father Ben Hurst is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.